defeat the darkness, find the Master Sword. Nintendo's official Legend of Zelda escape room, Defenders of the Triforce, is coming soon to your city. From the creators of the original Real Escape game, Defenders of the Triforce is a massive real-life adventure game where you and your team of heroes race against the clock to claim the Master Sword and banish Ganondorf forever. Check out zelda.dorkshelf.com for dates and cities. Defenders of the Triforce by Scrap Entertainment, brought to you by Secret City Adventures. From dorkshelf.com, this is Playdead, the podcast that talks with video game developers about their thoughts and feelings about death and how they're using it in their games. I'm your host, Gabby D'Arienzo. This week's episode is a little different than my usual Playdead episode format. One thing I like to do with all my guests when I interview them is ask them if they have a memorable video game death. Something that kind of stood out to them when they were playing a game, whether it's a player death or an NPC death, or even just a death mechanic they found very cool. I've been saving up all of my Season 2 guests' responses so far and have compiled them here for you to listen in one special episode. Just a heads up though, there are a ton of spoilers in this episode for a bunch of things, including Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons, Devil Survivor, Shadow of the Colossus, Gears of War, Chrono Cross, Life is Strange, and also Animorphs, if you care about that, so just be warned. But before I get into it, I want to talk a little bit about one of Playdead's sponsors, the Roasters Pack. The Roasters Pack is a coffee subscription service that helps you discover your new favorite coffee. Each month, the Roasters Pack sends you 3 bags of specialty coffees from Canadian craft roasters, along with little notes featuring stories about the beans, tasting notes from the roasters, brew guides, discounts on gear and coffee, and more delivered right to your door. This month, we're drinking Demelo Parietas Lemon Silo from here in Toronto, which features notes of roasted almonds, dates, and Mayan chocolate. We're also drinking Timber Train Coffee Roasters and Paro Benita from Vancouver, British Columbia, which features notes of molasses, grapefruit, and white peach tea. But our personal favorite this month is 49th Parallel's 3-year anniversary mystery coffee from Burnaby, British Columbia, which features notes of orange and sweet hazelnut. The Roasters Pack starts at just $26.95, all in, including shipping and taxes, but you can receive an additional $10 off your first month by going to theroasterspack.com and using the coupon code PLAYDEAD at checkout. That's PLAYDEAD, all one word, at checkout. And now, on with this week's episode. I asked Daniel Rosen, from the Death in Esports episode, that's episode 1 of season 2, if he had a memorable NPC or player death.
I kind of have one that came up in mind for both, and one is, I'll do the funnier one later, but the the NPC death that got me, that always got me, is the end of Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons. Or not right at the end, but like right before the end, when the older brother dies. And it's Brother Tales, like that game is one of my favorite games of all time. I've never seen a game accomplish the weird sense of like incompleteness that you're supposed to feel after a meaningful death, like that I have felt in life. I sound like a robot that I'm supposed to feel. that I have felt after family members or loved ones have died. And the fact that all of a sudden half of my controller is useless it sounds weird to say it like that, but it's very powerful in a way that like this character meant something to me because I like the character and I like the interaction he has with the brother. And it meant a lot to me because it meant a lot very specifically to me because the younger brother in that game looks a lot like my younger brother. A lot like my younger brother, especially when he was younger. And so to me, I read that older character as myself. And I essentially am now seeing the way that scene read to me is so now I can't move myself and I am watching my brother drag my corpse somewhere. And that hit me really, really hard. And I don't know that any game has accomplished that for me. Whenever I see character deaths, especially, it was a player character, but whenever I see player character deaths or even NPC deaths, it often feels hollow. Characters react to it in an emotional way, but my link with a character is so intrinsically mechanic, I never feel that that's a character lost, but that is not... it is not going to change the way I play the game so significantly, especially because player character deaths are usually in RPGs, and very few RPGs are so quote-unquote cruel as to let my, you know, let that whole character slot go to waste. You know, the fact of the matter is, I played Final Fantasy VII very young, so I didn't really feel anything about Aeris, but you put Healing Materia on Barret, and he's Aeris now. Yeah. They give you Curly, or Kirlie? Kirle in FF5 right after Gallif dies. Like, she's his granddaughter with all of his abilities that you gave him, which doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Or in Dragon Quest games, a lot of the times when characters die, they just sort of bring them back. But in this game, this was a player character. This is 50% of my interaction with this game that is dead. It is a side of... It is a way I interact with this game that is gone. And again, because of the personal thing that I sort of put onto it, it hit me really hard and made me want to kind of go and hug my brother afterwards.
Yeah.
Again, it was a really, really... And I'm not going to like sit here and say, but it made me cry, but it actually made me like feel for the character because I felt it mechanically. I was moving a stick that was no longer doing anything. And in a weird way, that sort of connected to the way that, you know, my synapses go when I try to, you know, I pass by the house of somebody who I knew who died, or I try to give a call, and all of a sudden, like, wait a minute, that number is not theirs anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It hit me the same way, where it's just like, oh, no, I can't do that.
Yeah.
And to lighten it, a funny one that happened to me, in Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess, there is a bit where you go to the Forbidden Woods. And in the Forbidden Woods, there is a Skull Kid, or a Stall Child, I think they call him, because they don't want him to be the Skull Kid.
Yeah.
And he summons little dolls that pop around, that kind of come around you, and you have to take them all out as Wolf Link. And I am, or not as Wolf Link, sorry, it is as like Human Link.
Okay.
And I got lost in there, because they're called the Lost Woods. And I'm trying to find where to go, and so I'm like, I can't see... Maybe it's on the other side of the thing, so I pull out the scope that the game had, the Hawk's Mask or something like that, and I zoom in real close to see, it's like, oh, it's a door over there, and then all of a sudden, one of those dolls jumps down right in front of my scope, and I throw my controller across the room and, like, go back and, like, fall onto my bed, and... This was maybe the second or third time I'd played this game at this point, and it just scared the shit out of me. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear. I should have asked.
You're fine, yeah. You're fine.
It scared the fucking shit out of me. And I immediately, that just flung me into this character that killed me. I was on my last heart, which is why I was like poking around like very carefully, like,
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Can't go anywhere. Immediately flung my controller. The nunchuck hits something, moves my stick backwards. I careen into this Skull Kid and die. And that has stuck with me like nothing else, because it is by far, no game has ever scared me more in that moment as this tiny, crappy JPEG texture of a skull face stretched out across my, like, 4x3 CRT.
Back when I was playing World of Warcraft a lot, and it was still vanilla, so, like, the first level 60, I remember... battling the boss Onyxia, and it was a 40-man's raid.
That's Stephanie Harvey, who I also had the pleasure of speaking with in the Death in Esports episode. Stephanie Harvey is a professional Counter-Strike GO player who talked to me about a memorable raid, which is basically a cooperative boss battle in World of Warcraft.
And it was just like a dragon that you had to beat, and it had like fire breath, and you know, it was very simplistic at the time. And I remember I was a mage, and most of the raid was dead. We were three people alive, and Onyxia had like 25%, which with most of the raid dead, like, you're not supposed to be able to kill her. And I would, I remember I would like, I was bandaging, and dude, I haven't played WoW in so long, I don't even remember if that's the right terms, but I was like bandaging, doing DPS, so, like, running around the boss, and eventually we downed it without dying. And like, I remember the whole raid, like the 37 people were completely quiet during like at least 30 minutes, or I don't know how long it took us to kill him with three people only, but it was like pretty insane, and people applauded at the end. And although it has nothing to do comparing to like when I play in really high level tournaments or on stage and stuff, I think that was one of my like high in games where, hey, I really like this feeling of like team bonding that I can find in video games, and like kind of quote unquote competing or successfully doing something as a group is amazing. And that was back in 2004 or 2005. So that was in the early years of my career. And still today, that's what I look for the most when I play Counter-Strike. It's like the opposite of a death too, because it's like I stayed alive, but and like the feeling in WoW when you die in a raid, and you know when it's those really really hard raid, when one person dies, sometimes it goes as a domino effect. Everybody all of a sudden dies within like a couple seconds. It's so I hate it, but I love it at the same time. Like, you know, your life is so important that if you're the one that fucks up first, like everything else is a chain and everybody kind of crashes. And like, I don't play WoW much anymore. And I think the whole game kind of changed and I think it's for the better. But it was really memorable moments, these raids.
I asked Season 2, Episode 2 guest Justin Kuiper, the lead writer of Necrobarista, an upcoming game inspired by Japanese visual novels, if he has a memorable video game death.
Indeed, I do. So, I guess I feel like maybe I should start off by describing the game. The game is Devil Survivor. It's a Shin Megami Tensei spinoff. So I guess starting from square one, for people who have never heard of this game, before there was Pokemon, there was Shin Megami Tensei. And Devil Survivor basically looks at, like, what are the realistic consequences of a Pokemon-like world? So think about what Pokemon is. You have people running around in urban settings, and they capture and tame these monsters that are, like, in a lot of cases, capable of lethal force. And everything is, you know, happy fun times, you know, all your Pokemon faint and then you, oh, nothing bad happens, right? In Devil Survivor, it's like, okay, my monsters beat up your monsters, and now you should give me all of your food and water, or something really bad is going to happen to you, because this is the what has happened to society now that we have, you know, people running around taming monsters. So that's the kind of game that it is. And one of the mechanics that exists in Devil Survivor is every character has this death clock. And it's sort of like this interesting mix of like fantasy and hard science fiction, where, well, not hard science fiction, but like you have sci-fi elements. It's sort of cyberpunky in a way, sort of Shadowrun-y, where you have wizards and hackers. But basically, everybody has this technology. It's like sort of this like big data entity that's like looking at plausibly what everybody's lifespan is down to the day. And you're in, you know, Tokyo, and you look around you and everybody has a giant six above their head. And it's like, oh no, like what's happening in 6 days that's gonna kill like literally everybody in this area? And then you look at like the people in your party. And because the game is about like what happens in 6 days. So the game basically takes place over the course of a week. And like on days when you wake up and like your party members have a zero above their head, it's like, oh no, what's gonna happen today? And so a certain element of the game is about like cheating death and like, you know, looking for people who have zeros and then, you know, saying like, oh, this person like is basically marked for death. Let's stick with them and try to beat destiny. And like when you like beat a really powerful boss and like your character is like did have a zero and then they like go up to a three, it's like you have 3 days left to live. It's like the best feeling ever because it's like, oh, 3 days feels like such a long time to be alive in this, you know, world of nightmare. And so I guess having now described this game to you, there's a moment in which you come to these two guys who are basically, you know, they've been rivals throughout the game. Rivals in the sense of having very different ideas about what proper conduct means in this, you know, pre-apocalypse where everybody is, trying to amass resources and stealing food from each other. And they get into a very heated, very passionate argument. And then they have what is essentially a Pokemon battle. And it's sort of this clash of titans where you have, you know, basically one guy has his big dragon and the other guy has, you know, basically like it's a Charizard versus Blastoise kind of confrontation. And you watch this play out and then one guy is defeated. And then you see, you know, the monster, which is still on the battlefield, walk over the corpse of the Pokemon that was just slain. And then he grabs the trainer by the neck, lifts him up, and then he snaps his neck and tosses him aside like a limp rag doll. And that's the moment.
The first one that comes to mind is probably the same one that half the people will say, but and it's, spoiler alert, not technically a death, but there is a horse in this game called Shadow of the Colossus who goes through some shit for you, the idiot, and it's pretty affecting. And I also played that game when I was on a lot of prescription painkillers because I just had my wisdom teeth out. And so there's a lot of that game that felt probably slightly more immediate than it actually was.
This is Adam Saltzman, an independent game developer currently working on the upcoming post-apocalyptic survival game Overland. In Season 2, Episode 3, Adam describes how dogs are playable characters in Overland, and despite being less useful than human characters, players still feel an intense attachment towards them. It's no surprise then that one of Adam's most memorable video game deaths involves losing his horse in Shadow of the Colossus.
I was a disaster. Like, I was just like openly weeping. It was so bad. And they worked so hard. Like, that team did so much to build the relationship between you and the horse and have this sort of like sense of trust with a digital character. Like, these are all things that I think are so worth trying to do. And like, some people will never get it. Like, for some people, Overland will just be too hard, and that'll be that. For some people, it'll always be too easy, and that'll be that. For some people, Shadow of the Colossus has a dumb camera. I don't like that dumb camera, it's just bad. And that's how they will experience that game. And it won't work on them. The things that the camera, just the camera does to build, and just like what the buttons do, just those things to make that connection between you and this totally invisible thing, bunch of like ones and zeros somewhere, it won't work on them. But when it works, it's really cool. It's for sure memorable. I just had this weird realization so like very recently, because a good friend is working on a JRPG indie game right now, and we were talking about different games that we played or liked or whatever, and had this like really kind of like sudden strong feeling that like I don't think I've ever basically ever cared about an RPG character, maybe ever, with like a very small handful of exceptions, which is weird for such like a story-based game and experience. But there's a bunch of RPG places that I have like a very strong emotional reaction to. And I'm curious like how many other people are, like, are you actually nostalgic about a character, which is totally possible. Cause like, I have this like robot problem where I don't understand fam culture at all. And so like, I'm 100% not qualified to comment on whether or not an RPG character is actually memorable or not. But I was like, as a designer, I think if I'm looking at this stuff critically, for me, there's places and there is music, and those things in isolation, I feel like they carry 90% of the burden and the weight and the impact of memories I have of these game characters. And part of it is totally an age thing. Like, JRPGs are made for 15-year-old kids, and they function that way well. And that's when I played Final Fantasy VII, and I remember being like floored by these like deep characters or whatever. But it's weird to me that the thing that lasted is places and sounds, and that I just couldn't care less about the characters if I tried. Which is like, that's the whole thing. These games are just like, they, I feel like they present themselves as characters and stories, and maybe in some ways their long-term footprint is more like you'd expect from a walking simulator or something. The other thing that comes to mind is dying at the very last Bowser fight in like Super Mario Brothers 3 when I was in like third grade or something. And I had limited video game time when I was a kid. You're only allowed to play a certain amount of hours or whatever. And so, and I didn't have like strategy guides or things. So I didn't know about all the secret warps in Super Mario 3. And so if I wanted to beat Super Mario 3, I had to play through all the worlds. And to play through all the worlds was this ridiculously complicated undertaking, because I think I could play 30 minutes of video games a day or something. So I'd have to play through World 1 and part of World 2, and then pause the game till tomorrow. And then I'd play through the rest of World 2 and then pause it. And then the next day, I'd play through as much of World 3 as I could get through and then pause it. And this would go on for like 8 days or something. where I would save, I would work out a system where I could like not play at all for 5 days and then blow all the time in one afternoon and see how far I could get. And I can still remember finally getting to the final boss fight, getting all the way through World 8, which is just a giant impossible disaster of a Super Mario World, and getting all the way through the last castle and finding Bowser and getting him down. He tries to jump on you, and when a lot like the boss in Spelunky that people might be more familiar with now, he tries to stomp on you, and when he misses, he smashes apart the blocks at the bottom of the screen, and when he smashes all the blocks, he falls off the screen and you win the game. You get to save the princess, all that good stuff. But this was like this ridiculous undertaking of playing the game for a year or something. And then on just that run, it's like the opposite of a speed run. It took like 2.5 weeks or something to get to Bowser. And I got him all the way down to the last row of blocks. And I was like hyperventilating and like sweating profusely and choked and got crushed by Bowser after this like nearly month-long attempt. And I was just, it's probably like in the top 10 times that I've been the most upset in my whole life. Like I can probably count on one hand the times I've been that upset and distraught.
Let's take a break from talking about death in games for a minute and instead talk a little bit about one of Playdead's other sponsors, FreshBooks. FreshBooks is a cloud-based accounting software program that is very easy to use, and it's designed to help you work smarter, get organized, and get you paid quickly. Use FreshBooks to create and send clean and professional-looking invoices in about 30 seconds. You have the option to connect your bank account or credit card to FreshBooks so you can receive online payments directly and also keep an eye on your expenses as they automatically import into your account every day. The new dashboard and notification center tell you how your business is doing and makes it easy for you to figure out what invoices have or have not been paid yet. FreshBooks really is fantastic, and I highly recommend trying it out whether you're a freelancer or you have your own game studio or you're just looking for easy-to-use accounting software. You can sign up for a free 30-day trial, no credit card required, if you go to freshbooks.com/playdead. Be sure to enter playdead in the How Did You Hear About Us section to let them know that we sent you. For the Death in Virtual Reality episode, Season 2, Episode 5, I interviewed my good friend Kimberly Coronia and asked her about her most memorable video game death. Kim is a 3D artist and VR game developer whose work focuses on creating empathy in VR. So when she shared with me what video game deaths had the most impact on her, they didn't entirely surprise me. In Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, there's this controversial scene that puts players into the shoes of an undercover American agent who has to commit an act of terrorism.
So the player goes undercover as a CIA agent who participates in a mass shooting at a Moscow airport to gain the trust of a Russian terrorist group. So really, you're a good person, but it's one of those situations where you're like being forced to do bad things. Like Vin Diesel in that new Fast and Furious movie. Right? So I remember reading about the level before it came out, and I was like, could I? Couldn't I? So I was like, okay, I won't know unless I try. Because it gives you the option to skip. They were very kind to be like, hey, you don't want to kill a bunch of motherfuckers. Push this button. And I decided to do it. And as I'm going through the airport, killing these people, begging for their lives, I felt so bad. And I just remember feeling like a terrible, terrible, terrible person. They were like crouching, huddled in the corner. And I'm just like, no big deal, heartless motherfucker with a gun. And I just remember how impactful that was. And I definitely knew at that moment I wasn't a serial killer. So yeah, I could never do it. I couldn't do it. Yeah, I remember how heavy that was. It was crazy. Next time I would totally skip a level like that. So yeah, I mean, they gave you outs. You could have backed out. So I don't know, I was like, yeah, let's just see, because, you know, I was a professional Halo player, so I killed everything, give a fuck, snipe it. But there was something really different about listening to people beg for their lives and then doing it. It was just really random. Yeah. Of course, I might have gone in there implying a lot of empathy, too, like, before it even happened. But regardless, I felt like a shitty human for days. So I think that's my second one, I think, was Gears of War, where you're going through a level and somewhere in the level, this little boy comes to help you. and it's like a, you give him the sniper and you're like, go in there, crawl through this little hole, I believe I'm remembering this correctly, and take out, you know, this boss, and you send him in there and he actually gets killed. And it was an option to send him in there, and I remember just feeling so much regret for sending a child, an NPC made up imaginary child, into his death. Like, it really affected me. And I mean, that was before VR teams. Could you imagine? I'm gonna be really bad at Resident Evil, I think is what I'm saying. When we play it, I think that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Fair. Both your examples were so sad.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Was there supposed to be a good
death? No.
Elika in Prince of Persia. Because she died, but then she didn't. It was kind of like Beauty and the Beast, kind of. That was a good one.
These are great.
I'm sorry. I'm like, I hate sad things. Let me tell you some sad
I also had the pleasure of speaking with Andrew Willens for the Death in VR episode, who is the lead designer of VR multiplayer space shooter Eve Valkyrie. Andrew shared with me his most memorable video game deaths.
Recently, because I've traveled quite a bit, I found that Rogue Legacy is just one of the best games I've ever played in my life, and I can't stop playing it. And it's got a very interesting kind of inevitable death to it. And one of the things I like about this is I'd see this as a metaphor for inheritance tax, but, you know, every time you die, the idea with that game is you basically last as long as you can, get as much gold as you can to then buy things to pass on to the next generation. And each generation is a brand new character that goes into the dungeon, and you meet the gatekeeper and you pay over a tax basically to go back into the dungeon. And I think, yeah, there's probably some strong metaphors with income tax and inheritance tax that you can draw from that, but that's one of my favorite games basically at the minute, and that seems to be nicely focused on death. Whereas you've got other games where, you know, like Deus Ex. Now for me, Deus Ex, having just finished it, it's one in a list of many, many games that do this, like Oblivion, Skyrim, Fallout 4, whatever, is having the ability to save at any point ends up for me with a weird relationship with death, where death in the game, it's not a frustration. The only frustration is if you forgot to save your game. And so what I find with those games, particularly things like Deus Ex, is I'm effectively living out my perfect life. So when I play Deus Ex, I'll kind of save the game almost every minute, you know, meticulously for that perfect playthrough. And, you know, if I drop the ball at one point, you know, if I mess up one conversation tree or don't get a headshot on someone, I reload and I start and I resave. So for me, it's an interesting way to tackle death, where effectively what you're doing there is more like Groundhog Day. You are literally playing a game like that until you have the perfect run. And maybe that's just me, but that's kind of how I read that one.
Niev Schoner is an independent game developer and writer who I had the absolute pleasure of meeting at the Queerness in Games conference a few years ago. I interviewed her in Season 2, Episode 4 about her upcoming Icelandic folklore-inspired game, Soflitlatofamin, and asked her if she has a memorable video game death.
Yeah, I was thinking about this because I listened to the show, so I knew the question was coming. And so I actually have two, because the first one that came to mind was Chrono Cross, because at this point it's kind of a joke that I can't be on a podcast without talking about Chrono Cross at some point. But the one that I think about with that that's the most interesting is actually a death that you never see happen, but it's the player's death. And this is like somewhat spoilers, but it's at the very beginning of the game. The basic premise at the beginning of Chrono Cross is that you get sucked into another dimension where you died. And that has always just struck me as a very interesting use of death in a game. Because, you know, you can go and you can look at your tombstone in the other world where you died. And before you, like, really figure out what's going on, you go talk to this girl who's your girlfriend in your, like, home world. And when you tell her who she is, she's like, how cruel of you to, like, pretend to be my friend who died when he was a kid. And there's a lot of, especially that very beginning, there's a lot of differences between the towns that sort of come down to, like, how poorly this little village dealt with the death of this child that is you. And so then you're coming back and you're seeing like how hard it was for this village to sort of cope with you dying as a child. That is, I think, really powerful and very interesting, because that's not a thing that comes up a lot in games, of like what it would actually be like if you had died. The other example that I was thinking of was Life is Strange. And this one is a lot more spoilery. So I guess if anyone cares about Life is Strange spoilers, they shouldn't listen to this example. But a lot of that game is you repeatedly trying to prevent the death of this character, Chloe, who the main character, Max, has, depending on how you play it, but in my opinion, it's canon, like this lesbian relationship with. And the end of the game, you are sort of making a choice between letting her, like basically you continually stopping her from dying, the world she's supposed to be dead. And so it's like tearing apart the world that it seems, basically. And so you basically have to choose between like this time tornado hurricane from destroying the town, or just letting, like, going back, undoing all of the time changes that you did and just letting her die. And normally I would be sort of in the mindset of like accepting that she has to die, but what made it interesting to me was the fact that it had, like, it was very much a queer story, and it's also very magical realist the way that they tell it. And so when I actually got to that moment, I chose to let the town be destroyed and to save Chloe, because to me it was more powerful for this like queer girl to make the decision that, like, if this world, like if this town cannot exist with a like lesbian couple, then maybe like this town doesn't deserve to exist, or like that I need to leave this town behind. And because it was sort of magical realist, it was a little bit different than in my mind than like, oh, let's just destroy this town. Like, it became more symbolic of like, I have to leave this home behind in order for me to like pursue this actual happiness that I want. That sort of resonated with some of my own experiences. So yeah, and it was weird just because like for so long I would have, like, I remember when I was a kid, long after I was reading like books far beyond this level of reading, my dad would read me Animorphs at night. It was just like a way for us to have this like moment together, especially because both of my parents worked a lot, and so like I didn't want to give up this moment of like every night, like, you read a chapter of a book to me. And I remember there was one where I don't fully remember the plot, but basically like this the main character has to choose between like the girl that he has a crush on or the world, which is going to be destroyed. And it turns out to be some simulation that like aliens are doing, but he chooses the girl and not the world. And as a kid, I was like, that's so dumb. Like, why would you choose one life over like all of these lives? Like, even if it's for love, like, you just need to accept the fact that, like, you know, because I grew up with this like family of World War II, and my dad was a pastor, so he performed funerals all the time. So even as a child, like, I was very accepting of like people are going to die. So it's just like, you just have to accept that like she's going to die. But then when I finally got this moment, like the fact that that story was about a queer story made it different, and where I was just like, no, like, fuck this town. If like this town can't exist with like a queer relationship in it, then fuck it. That was what was so interesting to me about that game, was just how much the queerness of it made me go, well, like, it changed that whole arithmetic for me of like, who, you know, do you accept this, all these people dying, or like the person that you love? Because now it wasn't like this super heteronormative love, it was queer love, and I was like, okay, like, fuck, stand up for queer love.
Special thank you to Daniel Rosen, Stephanie Harvey, Justin Kuiper, Adam Saltzman, Kimberly Coronia, Andrew Willens, and Niev Schoner for speaking with me about their most memorable video game deaths. You can check out each of their Playdead Season 2 interviews by going to playdead.dorkshelf.com or subscribing to us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. The music used in this episode was written and composed by my good friend Justine and comes from their latest mix on SoundCloud, which you can check out at soundcloud.com/syntecta/sets/mishmash. You can also listen to more of Justine's music and support them at syntecta.bandcamp.com and follow them on Twitter at syntecta. That's syntecta spelled S-I-N-T-E-C-T-A. Seriously, they're the loveliest. Please go support them. The Playdead podcast is a proud member of the Dorkshelf Podcast Network. You can listen to more episodes on Playdead and check out other Dorkshelf podcasts on dorkshelf.com. Thank you so much again for listening and supporting the Playdead podcast. You can follow Playdead on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr at Playdeadcast. And if you're enjoying these kind of compilation episodes, let me know. I would love to hear what you think of them. And if you have a memorable video game debt that you want to share with me, email me. I'm Gabby@dorkshelf.com. That's Gabby with two B's. I'm also on Twitter @Gabdar. Thank you so much for all your support.